Hey there, be sure to take a minute to check out the links that are posted in the episode notes.
What's up? You are now listening to Americanized, a storytelling podcast where you will hear from eclectic first and second generation Americans share their stories and real life experiences as children of immigrants. In part one of this two-part series, you will hear from Wally Miller. She's a financial coach who helps women succeed on their financial wellness journeys. She's a native New Yorker and also a Latina whose father immigrated to the U.S. from Ecuador. And one thing I forgot to mention, Wally became a millionaire in her 30s. In this episode, we talk all things money, our relationship with money, our history with money, and our futures with money. Stay tuned.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast, Rosalyn. So my name is Wally Miller. I'm a financial coach and I help mostly women. Sometimes they will bring their spouses on board, but I help women who want to figure out this money stuff, right? Who feel overwhelmed by the thought of paying off debt, building up savings, start building wealth and taking care of their own financial story. So I always kind of was interested in money. And I consider myself a little bit of a money nerd, but it wasn't until my 20s where the whole notion of being quote unquote good with money really got challenged. And I thought I was good. How I defined being good with money was that I really tried to stay out of credit card debt, and I was able to pay my bills on time. And so my sort of barometer there was, okay, if you can pay your bills on time and you have, you can stay out of credit card debt, you're going to be good with money. And in a lot of ways I was, but there was this whole other component that I was missing that I didn't even know really existed. And I didn't really know people were doing. And it wasn't until I got into my 20s and sort of, you know, I had a really ideal job and I enjoyed the work that I was doing. But when management changed and leadership changed and sort of an ideal work environment became a little toxic and I felt stuck, I realized, okay, I can't just say goodbye, I'm out of here, and realize that I was living paycheck to paycheck, that if I walked away from that job, that I was really going to be stuck and lose everything that I had worked so hard to build. And so a lot of my clients will come to me because even though they have good incomes, they're making good money, they have a solid career, they've quote unquote made it, they feel a little bit stuck because they haven't been taught, we hadn't been taught, you know, how to figure out this money stuff.
And why do you think is it that, you know, as important as money is, nobody is talking about it? You wrote that it's a taboo. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when we're thinking about sex, politics, and money, these are just topics that you don't talk about. And honestly, I think sometimes politics and sex gets talked about way more than money does, right? Absolutely. It can feel weird and awkward to talk about how much money you're making, how much money your rent is, how much are you spending? What can you afford? What can you not afford? And there's sort of a movement going on right now in social media, particularly with the younger generations, called quote unquote loud budgeting, where people feel empowered to say, oh, I'm not going to go out this Saturday night because I'm saving for a down payment on a home, or I'm saving for my summer vacation, or I'm saving to buy a new laptop, right? And it's sort of really making clear to the people around you what your financial goals are so that they can help you stick to it, right? And sort of setting those boundaries. And, you know, I still to this day, it's easier for me to talk about money, but there's still certain people that I would rather not have this conversation with, right? Or there's probably some questions that people ask me that I might get uncomfortable with, but I think it's working through that discomfort and trying to inspire and normalize conversations, right? If we begin to talk to our coworkers about the amount of money you're making versus someone else, right? And we know now there's laws that allow that, because for such a long time, it was, you know, you could be fired if you talk to your own coworkers who were in the same role and in the same position about the amount of money that they were making, right? And how now employers have to put like a salary range, right? Where before they didn't have to do that. And you were sort of going into an interview and into a position and didn't even know what other people could be making at the bottom or at the top. So I think really normalizing conversations around money will make it feel a little less taboo, right? When was mm-hmm. the last time you sat down with a friend and asked, yeah, like, what are your financial goals? What are you like working towards, right? It's not a conversation that we really, really have. And I think if we can just start there, like, yeah, like, what do you want to do this summer? How do you think we're going to get there? You know, how do you think we can make that happen? So I think just asking questions to the people we care about and the people we spend time with is going to be really important to sort of changing the narrative about feeling more comfortable when it comes to talking about money.
Yeah, that's true. And that's when you say that, because I'm thinking about how this applies to myself and my relationship with money or conversations around that. And I'm definitely someone who's a little hush-hush about money. Like, I don't share how much I make, or I feel like that's like private information. Like, nobody needs to know that information or how much I pay for rent. Like, it's Boston, it's expensive, but you don't need to know how much I spend or how much it is. So I definitely fall into that group of people who make it a taboo. And I really don't know why it is. I'm trying to connect it to maybe my household growing up. That just wasn't a conversation that happened, because it just wasn't something that you share with your kids, the money situation. But
so a couple of things that you said, right? One of them is that it's something that is private, right? Mm-hmm. Where did you learn that from, right? What is the thought that makes you feel that talking about the amount of money that you make is private? Right. And this is not to say we have to share all of the ins and outs of all of the things that we do, but it's always questioning what is the thought that is leading to that feeling that I need to keep this inside. Right. Is it maybe fear of people judging you for the amount of money that you're spending on rent? Right. And sort of having that feeling. Is it the feeling of, oh, you make that much money, but you don't look like it, or you make that much money, or you're underpaid, right? So there's all of these like different thoughts that really lead to how we interact in the world. So I would pose to you, when you say, right, that it is something private, what is the thought leading to that feeling of wanting to sort of protect that?
Right. That's what I'm trying to figure out right now. Because, like, when I do share the numbers, I don't get the judgment from the person. Like, I don't get those feelings that I probably think are going to happen. So, I don't know. Maybe, I really don't know. That's my answer right now. I really don't know.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, right? Like, we have to sort of begin questioning, why is it that we do the things that we do when it comes to money, right? I know in my family, it was like, you don't put your dirty laundry out there, right? The things that happen in the family stay in the family. You don't talk about what you have or what you don't have. And so a lot of that was what I carried with me. I was just like, oh, it's rude, right? Society says it's rude to talk about money. But who's society, right? And who decided that that was the rule, that if you talked about money, that it was rule? Now, we've all interacted with someone who maybe might be a little bit braggadocious, right? And it's like, okay, that's like totally different, right?
Yeah.
But there's also a feeling that the reason why a lot of disparity in companies, in just one single company, there are a lot of salary disparities that happen is because people are not talking about how much money you're making, right? I remember the first job where I negotiated my salary. And I think about that now. And when I tell that story, people are like, wow, you were so brave of negotiating. I thought that was just what people did. And I thought it was normal. And I was a little like naive. Honestly, when I think about, you know, younger version of me, I'm like, wow, she was pretty brave, but it wasn't really bravery. It was just, I didn't know any better. I just thought that that's what you did. And I remember being interested in this position, and I knew a guy who had gotten the position, and he had more experience than I did. But I remember him telling me how he negotiated his salary and how much money he was making at the time. So I knew I wasn't going to make that much, but I knew that I could definitely ask for more than what I was making at my current position. And I remember when they gave me the job offer, I was like, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. However, and I gave them the salary range. This is how much I was thinking. Mm-hmm. And they said, okay, I'll get back to you. And they got back to me and they offered me what I had, you know, sort of the middle number of what I had been asking, right? Had I not had that conversation with that guy, I wouldn't have even known what a salary range looked like, right? So I think having these conversations and helping people out, how do you know if you're spending quote unquote too much on something? How do you know whether or not you might be underpaid, right? If the conversations around money don't happen. I think especially with, like I mentioned, this whole loud budgeting trend, I think it's really helpful when you tell people around you what it is that you're wanting to do. So if you tell someone, hey, I am really not going to be going out as much as I once did because I want to really focus on paying off my student loan debt, there's not going to be a lot of people who say, ah, forget about your student loans, like, come out with me, right? I mean, you might have somebody who says that, but it's just like, oh, wow, right? And then it begins, it might start or plant a seed in their head, right? About like, oh, is there a financial goal that maybe I should be thinking about, right? Or someone who says, oh, I don't even know how much student loans I owe. Like, I don't even look at it. I don't even pay, like, right? So it just begins that conversation about, you know, whatever the financial goal is, right? I shared in a blog post one time that when we're thinking about generational wealth, right? There's this institutional knowledge that gets passed down. There's like this wealth of knowledge that gets passed down from one generation to the next. For example, I remember when I was in high school, that I had to fill out the financial aid application and I was applying for colleges. Well, neither one of my parents had done that before. And so they couldn't help me in that journey. They didn't know what that was. They didn't know how to apply to schools. They didn't know what a financial aid package was, what FAFSA was, right? And so I had to navigate that world all on my own versus a peer who maybe had a parent or two who had been through that process before could share that information, right? When I bought my home for the first time, my parents, you know, it was like, how do you buy a home? Like, what is a down payment? What is escrow, right? If your parents have never purchased a home before, that might be some knowledge that you may not have unless we have conversations with other people who have that experience, right? So I could talk to my coworker and be like, hey, you own a house. Like, what do you think about this, right? Or my real estate agent said I needed something called, you know, an escrow account. What is an escrow account, right? What's a mortgage lender? What's a mortgage interest rate? So I think, you know, when we're thinking about building generational wealth, right, for our families and like starting to leave something behind, wanting to create something to sort of change our family's financial legacy, we also must not forget about the institutional knowledge that gets passed down when you introduce new experiences to that family line.
I love that you're talking about the generational wealth and institutional knowledge. And I feel like in my experience and conversations I've had with people, when the institutional knowledge is not passed down, it is so, so, so easy to get overwhelmed with everything so much, like to the point where you kind of avoid it at all. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to share for people who are in that bubble where they're like, financial knowledge, financial literacy is too much and I don't want to touch it, or I don't want to look at it, or it's like too much to understand, too overwhelming, too much jargon? What are your thoughts or things to share or advice to give for people in that bubble?
Yeah. Unfortunately, yesterday I had a meeting with a couple that I've been coaching, and we've been working together for a while, and we were reviewing their workplace retirement plans, right? Just understanding what that is. Because usually you start a new job, they're like, sign these stack of documents, and you sign and you're like, I don't know what I signed over. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't understand my benefits. So I help my clients. It's one of the things that we review with my, one of the things I review with my clients, which is explain to them what their benefits are, right? And everything from their workplace retirement accounts to their health benefits and things like that, right? Just so that they can understand, right, what it is that they have access to that they may not even realize, right? What are some of the work benefits that they have? And I did a little bit of teaching in the beginning. And then after that, we went into their workplace retirement account, and they were like, I feel like they make it unnecessarily complicated. I said, bingo, right? And why? Why is that, right? The reason why it's created that way is because you'll either avoid it, or if you have an inkling of interest, you will pay someone to manage it for you. And guess what? That person is never going to care about your money more than you do, right? And this is where you have people who begin, you know, paying for services, paying for things, or have fees taken out. They don't know what they're paying for, right? Or get into a specific financial product or a specific investment product. They don't even know what it is, right? Right. And the financial literacy and the financial education is lacking across America. I will say that there have been some moves in the last like 3 to 5 years where many more states are requiring a personal finance class or a financial education course as part of a requirement of high school graduation. But it is very far and few in between, right? Wow. So we don't learn what a checking account is, what a savings account is, what a credit score is, how you get a good one, how do you get a bad one, right? What affects the credit score, handling credit cards, loans, right? The different types of loans, everything from student loan to car notes to mortgages, right? And we don't know how to we don't know about those things. And then it's like, well, then who do you ask? And this is where, especially if you're a child of immigrants, if you're first generation, it's just like, well, my parents don't have experience with this. So who do I go to, right? Who in my circle, who in my neighborhood, who around me has had experience with this? And a lot of times there's not people in our close circle who've had experiences with this. And then it's just like, well, then who do I ask, right? I feel like I should know these things, but I don't. And so when you ask the question, you know, there are people who are avoidant and feel overwhelmed. Unfortunately, it is true, right? But there is a way to simplify finances. There's a lot of things out there. Like if we just think about a regular toolbox, right? You might have an Allen wrench and a hammer and a screwdriver and a star screwdriver and a drill and nails and screws and all these different things. And it's like, yeah, there's a whole lot of things inside of that toolbox. Mm-hmm. But when I think about the specific project that I'm working on right now, what is the one tool that I really need to know about to make sure that I can effectively complete this project? And I would say it's almost the same thing with your finances, right? We have to start with what is the goal? The way you want to save for a home down payment is going to be very different than the way you save for retirement, right? The way you save for a kid's college fund is going to be very different than the way you save for that summer vacation. And so really understanding what is most important to you right now, right? In the next 3 months, in the next 6 months, right? Figure out what are all the ways that you could possibly spend money on, right? All the ways that you could possibly use money, and think about what are some of those goals, some of those financial needs, experiences, wants that I am going to have in the next 3, 6, 9, 12 months. And how can I get there, right? And just start with what it is that you want. I talk a lot about financial independence, right? Mm-hmm. Which essentially means not having to worry about money, not having to rely on working in order to sustain your lifestyle, right? That is what being financially free means, that you have more options. And I love talking about that because I think it shakes people when you're like, wait a minute, I don't have to wait until I'm 65 to retire. I could actually reach financial independence and achieve that sooner. And even at 50 or 55 or 45 or 40, right? There's a pathway. There's a way that I could reach financial independence and be work optional by the time I'm 45. Like, are you kidding me? Right? But it's just like kind of expanding people's minds to what's possible and knowing that it's available to you, that it's available to you, right? And thinking about what it is that you really want your life to look like, and then simply using money as a tool to get there.
So, Wally, what inspired you to, from what you were seeing and experiencing, what inspired you to make this change and shift your thoughts and the way you move with money?
Yeah. You know, I mentioned earlier that one of the things that happened was sort of an ideal work environment became sort of a toxic work environment. And as the days and the weeks and the months went on and it just got worse and worse, I realized that I didn't have a whole lot of options. I couldn't just say, okay, I'm out of here. because if not, if I missed one paycheck, definitely two paychecks, I didn't have enough. And I would lose everything that I had worked so hard for. So I wasn't going to be able to pay for my housing. I wasn't going to be able to pay for my car note. And, you know, I was making decent money and I just couldn't believe that I felt so stuck. And when I began to think about the amount of money that I had made and realized that I didn't really have a whole lot to show for it, I realized that I was missing something. And it just so happened that around that time, I saw a very clickbaity Forbes article. And the article was about a couple who had retired in their 40s to travel the world. Now, this intrigued me on so many different levels. One, I love to travel. It's something that I've always done. I was a solo traveler. Then when I got married with my husband, you know, when I married my husband, like we travel together and I still love to solo travel sometimes. So it was really sort of intriguing to me. And I wanted to know how they did that. How is it possible that you could walk away from your careers to travel the world? And as I read more into their story, I realized number one, they were really intentional about how they spent money. Number two, they were using the income that they were making while they were working. They were using that money to build wealth over time. And this wasn't something that happened overnight, but this whole idea of building wealth was something that I couldn't even relate to. I had no connection to that word. So when I read or somebody talked about building wealth, I sort of pictured like an old guy in a velvet robe, like smoking a cigar, right? That, and I was like, well, I will never be wealthy. I'm not an actor. I don't play any sports, right? Like that was my definition of building wealth. But what I realized was that it was really about being extremely intentional about how they were spending, how they were earning, and then how they were saving money on the side. And that was when like the light bulb moment hit for me. And I said, wait a minute, where is my money going? Mm-hmm. And I had to sit with that question for many, many weeks and try to dissect it to really understand where my money was going. Because it was easy for me to say, oh, my money goes to bills. But right. When I made a list of all of my bills, And I said, okay, here's my rent. Here's my light. Here's what I pay for my car note, my car insurance, gas, food. The numbers were saying that I had money left over, but it never felt that way. And that was when I realized there's a disconnect between the money that's coming in and the money that's going out.
Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for next week's episode with Wally, where she shares the keys that unlock the path to financial freedom. All original music produced by Stubborn Saul. You can find him on all music listening platforms at STBRNSAL.